This is Phil Davidson, and with me today is Rockford Symphony Orchestra Music Director Stephen Larson, and we are discussing Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker Suite, which will be performed by...
Got to correct you. Not the Nutcracker Suite. What the is Nutcracker.
It? Oh, the Nutcracker.
The whole thing. The whole ballet.
The whole schmear.
Yes.
Okay. Well, it'll be performed by RSO and the Rockford Dance Company on Saturday, December 7th, 7:30 p.m., and again on Sunday, December 8th at 3 p.m. at the Coronado Performing Arts Center. So, what motivated Tchaikovsky to write The Nutcracker? I think it was supposed to be a double bill with an opera or something like that.
Iolanta was an opera he had written about that time, and I think there was some intention of making it a double bill, although it would have been a long, very long evening. Nutcracker, as ballets go, is short, but thankfully history has not taken up the challenge of pairing both of them on the same evening.
Yeah, that would be long, wouldn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it would be.
Well, if I understand correctly in my readings, the initial performance of the ballet was apparently not considered a huge success, but there was more of a positive reaction to Tchaikovsky's score. Is that correct?
Yeah, it ran, I think, about six performances or something, and the reception was kind of lukewarm, and we don't know a whole lot about exactly what people thought then, but we probably had something to do with the mixed reviews of the choreography, mixed reviews of the dancing. I know there are some people that complained about some of the dancers. They didn't like particular dancers. Other people complained that the story... The story by based on a story by E.T.A. Hoffman, the story was confused and didn't do justice to the original. Well, it is confused. Even today, I'm not sure I could tell you exactly what happens in the first act. There's a lot of compressed action there, the things that go on very quickly and that are there more for visual effect than anything else. But it was certainly good enough that Tchaikovsky himself thought it was worthy of mining some of the best musical excerpts and putting them in a couple of suites that could be sold and played on concerts.
Why is this music so iconic? What's its magic?
Oh, where to go with that? It's magic is magic. It's all about magic. That's one reason. The other reason, this is late Tchaikovsky, and he is at the absolute height of his creative powers when he writes this. His orchestration is just, it's just breathtaking. The skill with which he uses the individual instruments of the orchestra, and yet with the complete clarity. It's hard not to want a piece to succeed when it has something like the title, "The Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy." You want that to be good. Mm-hmm. The Chinese dance, the Spanish dance, things like this. They have titles that you think, okay, let's see what is this going to sound like now. And, of course, these are our excerpts from the second act, these little dances he pulled out and put into the suite. But the music is so well-suited and so creative. I'm a big fan of Tchaikovsky's. And his other ballet that's very popular, that's become a great classic, is Sleeping Beauty. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of beautiful music in Sleeping Beauty. As opposed to, compared to the Nutcracker, I think Sleeping Beauty has a lot of very repetitious sections that are just kind of, they're cycled over and over again just to fill up space. That's not true in the Nutcracker. The Nutcracker has, they seem to be, each section seems to be individually tailored for what has to happen in that scene. And that's probably because that's what happened. The original choreographer and creator of the choreography, Marius Petipa, reportedly specified to Tchaikovsky exactly how long a piece was supposed to be to fill a particular piece of action, what meter it would be in, 3/4, 4/4, 2/4, whatever, and how many measures it would be, and what speed, what the tempo. All these things were very specific. So Tchaikovsky was not just faced with the open-ended task of, well, create a scene that people can dance to for, you know, for 5 minutes. He had very specific tasks to accomplish here, and he did it extremely well.
Well, now, there's something novel in the Nutcracker. It's an instrument called the celesta, or however you want to pronounce it.
Right.
So tell us about that and how it's used.
Well, Nutcracker was written in 1892. In 1888, in Paris, this instrument was invented. They called a celeste, which means heavenly. And the term was easily translated to Italian, where it became celesta. And this was a keyboard instrument that looks like a small piano, plays just like a piano, the same kind of keys. But instead of striking strings, the hammers strike tuned metal plates. So you get a very soft bell-like quality, not a hard ding like a glockenspiel. And by the way, the keyboard glockenspiel was invented just about the same time, too. But this produced a very, very pleasing, very high, ethereal, well, heavenly sound, and began to be used by several different composers after this. Tchaikovsky is supposedly on record as being the first composer to use this in a composition. And of course, as always, there's always some spoiler, some footnote. And there was a composer actually used it in a piece a couple years before that, but nobody knows the piece now. It's never played. So, you know, Tchaikovsky decided to exploit this piece not only in the Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy, but also in several other sections in the piece that referred to the second act snow scene. So the celesta is associated with fantasy, with the snow kingdom, with just this sort of surreal, happy quality that the second half has.
Was the Nutcracker always intended to be part of the Christmas season?
No. It's Christmassy in its origins. It starts out with a Christmas party at a certain Councillor Stahlbaum's house and goes on from there and has really nothing to do with Christmas for pretty much the rest of the story, except that it talks about sweets and sugar plums and candy and things like that kids used to dream about much more than they do now, because it's much more accessible now than it used to be back then. Sweets and candy, it used to be a real rare treat that you might get around the holidays. Interestingly, it wasn't until the 1960s that the Nutcracker began to become a holiday tradition, and really only in this country. This kind of blows my mind to think about. We think about Tchaikovsky as being this, of course, this great romantic composer that's written these famous classic pieces that have been around forever, well, at least until since he wrote them, but get played all the time and are part of the lifeblood of the classical music scene and indeed the ballet scene. Well, that wasn't the case with the Nutcracker. As you mentioned, it was not a particular success at its premiere, and it took a long time to catch on after that, and was roundly criticized by a lot of people because it was not pure ballet. It didn't. All of the characters were not trained dancers. They were children, sometimes very little, very young children, as young as 3 years old. There were in the first act. The first act can and still is often populated by ordinary middle-aged and up people who may be dancers, maybe may have some dance training, but don't necessarily have to be. So the Nutcracker has come down to be this rather unusual, really a unique hybrid of family-friendly activity, classical music, and dance all together in one form. And since the 60s, it's caught on here in this country and become a holiday tradition. One thing more that it's become, one of the reasons it's become such a tradition is that it involves so many different types of people in its in the staging. The whole families can participate in this in this ballet. And since it really only involves a very small handful of highly trained dancers, almost any dance company can put this piece on, and it becomes therefore a very lucrative production. Dance companies throughout this country depend on the Nutcracker to make their budgets, the ticket sales from the Nutcracker. It's extremely important. And of course, audiences keep coming back, because every year I look over my shoulder from the pit and sneak a glance back in the audience and look at the little girls and little boys in the first row staring with their mouths open at the stage and just eating up every second of what they're seeing, and look around and see their mothers and fathers doing the same thing next to them. It's really an enchanting spectacle.
It's wonderful. So you obviously are going to be working very closely with the Rockford Dance Company.
Yes.
What's it like working with dancers? Is there any particular challenge to this?
There's a great challenge to it. First of all, you learn working with dancers that the tempo is never right. The only thing that they have control over you is the tempo, and it's very rare that the dancer says that's perfect. Always a little fast or a little slower. But in their defense, it also requires a good eye from the conductor to be able to watch the dancers and be able to anticipate a move or how long a particular move is going to take. And that, therefore, you can stretch that moment just a little bit, or you can push it a little bit faster to coincide with the action. It takes a long time to learn to really do that, to become a good ballet conductor. I'm not sure that I am yet, but I keep trying. The other challenge working with dancers is that they don't speak the same language as musicians. And especially in working with the Nutcracker, they refer to different sections, different musical sections, by different names than musicians do. So it takes a while to learn the translation. And then when you finally do get to talking about the same thing, they don't think, of course, in musical terms. They think in dance terms. So there is that translation that has to it's fun to do that. But at first, the first time I conducted the Nutcracker, I felt like I was in a foreign country and didn't know the language. It was very, very kind of surprising. But you study up a little bit after that, and eventually you get used to it, and it becomes fun.
Well, I mean, I read through the student study guide that goes along with their matinee that they're going to come to, and the terminology was definitely different in there.
Oh, the terminology is different, and the whole idea of dance, the whole classical ballet tradition, is not something that you intuitively understand. The tradition of the pas de deux, the slow dance between the man and the woman, the two main characters, particularly in this case in the Nutcracker, the second act, followed by the variations, one for the man, one for the woman, and then the when they come together after that. This is a ballet staple that happens in virtually every ballet. I think it's probably true. Every ballet has a pas de deux, followed by the variations. Every classical ballet anyway. And for the first-time person, maybe who's used to seeing a musical comedy or something like that, sits down and sees this, you wonder, well, why are they doing this? What's the story purpose of this? What story are they telling? Well, they're not necessarily telling a story. They're showing beauty and artistry and control of their bodies, sometimes seeming to defy physics, defy gravity. And that's what's beautiful about it. That, in conjunction with the music, it forms a spectacle that is sort of otherworldly. It's not something you ever see in real life, but you can see it when you sit down in the audience and listen to the orchestra and witness what these people are doing on stage.
Is that because of all we've just been talking about, is there a more extensive rehearsal schedule for something like this versus a traditional RSO classical concert?
Yes and no. We don't have to rehearse a whole lot as an orchestra for this, because the people in the orchestra have played Nutcracker many, many, mm-hmm. many times. And so the notes are all there. Everybody knows the notes. Everybody can play the piece right from the very beginning. We could probably wing it and show up for the first performance and say, okay, the curtain goes up. We're going to start playing now, and let's see what happens. That's taking a few chances, so we do rehearse. You do have to learn the individual dancers. They learn their choreography and how they work and everything. But the dancers themselves are working ahead for many weeks to learn the choreography. And at one time, they used to use piano accompaniment. Today, of course, they use a recording of the whole score. And that produces some problems because the recording that they're using might not necessarily be, well, probably isn't the way that I would do the piece or I hear the piece. So as the conductor, I have to put aside my view of how fast this piece should go and say, okay, we're going to do it the speed that the dancers want to do it at. So we really all serve the needs of the dancer when we do the production. It's kind of ironic in a way. We get together like one day or the day of the first rehearsal and run through the piece and then do it with the dancers. Dancers have been working on it for weeks already. Mm-hmm. And this is a big part of their fall. It is their entire fall season working on the Nutcracker.
Now, for this production, the orchestra is obviously not going to be on the stage. That would be a bit of a problem.
Right.
You're going to be in the pit. Yes. I'm not saying you're in the pits.
Yes.
But you're going to be in the pit. Mm-hmm. So describe that experience versus being on stage.
It's fun being in the pit. I love doing opera and doing ballet when you can be in the pit where you are out of sight of the audience. Of course, the dancers can see me. I'm visible because they have to be able to see what I'm doing sometimes, and I have to be able to see them, certainly. But everybody else in the pit is anonymous. So the fun thing about doing a ballet or an opera is there are little side jokes that go on among the musicians. You know, if somebody misses a note or something like that, there's smirks and snickers that go around and that sort of a thing. Everybody's much more relaxed playing in the pit because nobody's watching you. The bad thing about playing in the pit from the musician's point of view is they can't see what's happening on stage. I can see what's happening, and sometimes I'll react to something I see, and they're like, well, what's going on? What's going on? And I'll tell you later. can't really describe it, but only very few, Nanette Felix, our harpist, can, if she's not playing, get up and walk around to the front of the pit and get in the position where she can see something of what's going on. The rest of the players, the violinists, they never get a chance to do that because they're playing all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that'd be fun to be down there. Now, of course, many people have seen the Nutcracker. But can you give us, and you kind of already have in it, to some extent, a synopsis of what people will experience on December 7th or 8th?
It starts out with a scene of a well-to-do Victorian family Christmas. And everybody's gotten together and, they're drinking and eating and partying and having a good time, dancing. And the children are doing what children do. They're playing, they're fighting, and that sort of thing. And the story centers around a toy nutcracker that the mysterious Uncle Drosselmeyer gives to Clara, this young girl. And the nutcracker is broken by her brother. But then at night, after midnight, the clock strikes 12, magic begins to happen. The nutcracker comes to life, leads an army fighting against an army of mice led by the Mouse King. The mice are defeated, and then the scene changes, and everybody is taken away to a snow world where the snow is falling. It's a fantasy world where the Sugar Plum Fairy comes and beckons to Clara to come and join. And for the second act is a series of dances that are performed for Clara. She sits on a kind of a throne, and everybody performs for her, does all these dances. As a plausible story, it's ridiculous. As what a child might dream, It's entirely possible. Mm-hmm. It's fun. Wonderful things can happen in dreams, and that's what Tchaikovsky brings to us.
And so obviously, this is a family event.
Yes.
This is something that's going to appeal to kids and adults and grandmothers and grandfathers and everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you expect to probably see in the audience is all age groups.
And that's what I do see. I turn around and I look and I see people from their 70s down to the low single digits sitting there and enjoying the spectacle. It's something that you very rarely see in a concert hall. People of that span of ages all coming together to enjoy something. It's a magical experience.
Don't miss The Nutcracker, performed by the Rockford Symphony Orchestra and the Rockford Dance Company on Saturday, December 7th at 7:30 p.m. and on Sunday, December 8th at 3 p.m. at the Coronado Performing Arts Center. For more information about this concert and more, go to rockfordsymphony.com. Or you can call 815-965-0049. This is Phil Davidson.
And this is Steve Larson, Music Director of the Rockford Symphony.
Thank you for listening.